The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show, the cyber version. As those of you that listen know, we typically on Sundays have a show related to cybersecurity and or artificial intelligence. An awful lot to talk about these days. And as usual, I have my special guest, Mr. AI Nguyen, with us today. Nguyen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Nathan.
Great. Great. And I know Nguyen knows this, but I am mobile right now here overseas. So I'm going to turn the agenda here over to Mr. Nguyen, and I'll be connected up here later in the show. We may even have time to talk about some real estate or tax issues. There's a lot going on with the administration, but we'll see what our time looks like. And Nguyen, I'm not in a rush, so if you need to discuss more than what we were planning,
no,
that's
we're
fine.
Good. We're good.
Okay. Well, take it away.
Okay. Well, hi, everyone. And thank you, Nathan, for turning the mic over. Well, today we're talking about the cybersecurity, you know, about empowering employees against evolving threats. So this podcast is about, you know, how to build security-minded culture that protect against modern attacks. So in this episode, we dive into more practical training strategy, like a real-world example, how to like a workplace and stay one step ahead of criminal. So with that being said, I'm going to start, okay? So, you know, we love complex topics, and today's no difference. No exception. So we have some fascinating source material that we really zero in on human element, not just a firewall and algorithm, but us. Why are we so vulnerable? Okay. So, I mean, we always hear about data breaches and hack, but on the human side of it, where it's really get interesting. So in this source that I got, and we actually say that a whopping 95% of security breaches, they come down to human error. That's 95%. So that's pretty staggering statistic. But it makes you think, why? What makes it so easy to target? You know? Are we just not paying attention, or is there something more going on? So I think there's a combination of factors. So we got constantly evolved threat landscape for once. So, and think about this. The bad guys always come up with a new way to trick us, with new technology like AI, and getting more and more sophisticated, the attacker become much more common and hard to detect. So this is not your typical, you know, like click on links, spam an email anymore. We're talking about highly personalized phishing scam that seem to know your entire life story. And then there's the deepfake, you know? So those who don't know what deepfake, those pretty freaky. For those who might not know, I can explain what those are and why they're so scary in this context. So they use AI to create this incredible realistic but completely fake video. So you could have anyone appearing to say or do anything. It's almost impossible to tell not real. Like you can have a CEO of the company announcing a fake merger, you know, or worse, imagine a deep fake of your boss asking you to transfer money to fraudulent account. Okay, and it's terrifying how believable this technology is getting. And that's a pretty chilling thought. It's almost like the attacker aren't just hacking to your computer anymore. They hack into our mind. Okay, and this is, and that's one of the things that this source really emphasized, the psychology of the attack. So let me tell you what is the psychology of the attack. The attacker, the master exploiting our nature human tendency, things like trust, especially a professional setting. They prey on our fear of missing out, fear of getting in trouble. It's not just about knowing what phishing email look like anymore. It's about understanding how they're trying to manipulate our emotion and thought process. Have you ever encountered anything like the attack that almost got you? What I have. And it's scary how it is to let your guard down when you think you know what to look for. Even the expert can almost fall into this thing. That's why the whole training aspect is so crucial. And what's really interesting is that the source we're looking at, they don't just talk about basic security awareness training. They talk about building a resilient workforce. Like, what does it mean in practice? It means going beyond just teaching people how to spot the phishing email. It's about cultivating a mindset of critical thinking, of questioning, but not just blindly trusting everything you see online. Okay? So it's about empowering people to be a little bit more skeptical, a little bit more cautious. So instead, just automatically click on the link from your boss. You pause and think, wait a minute, does my boss usually communicate this way? Or maybe I should double check this. This is all about extra layer of security, and that's why I make the workforce more resilient. So it's less about memorizing the rules and more like shifting our mindset. So, but you know what struck me this out of this source? It's not just individual employee who need this kind of training. It's about getting the entire organization on board, okay? And the source actually make pretty compelling argument for that. They say that when everyone in organization, from a CEO to the intern, is aware of the risk, empowered to take action, is like having a massive network of human sensor. 1,000 eyes constantly look out for anything suspicious. So it's about creating a culture of cybersecurity awareness where everyone feels responsible for protecting the organization. And not just about you, you know, like avoiding data breaches and financial losses, although those are obvious huge concern. There are also legal and compliant issues to consider. The source mentioned that in a lot of industries, security training isn't an option anymore. There's a regulation and potential fine for non-compliance. This is a serious business, and I want to talk about it's affecting everyone, and not just a tech-focused role. You think about those yearly training modules that we often have to do at work. They might seem tedious, but in deep dive really highlight why they actually matter. And not just about checking a box, it's about protecting the entire organization, including your own job. And honestly, you know, I ask people this, would you rather spend an hour doing some training than dealing with the aftermath of the major cyber attack? And I think a lot of people could agree on that. But you know what's really interesting is that the source don't stop at advocating the basic training. They actually go into further and talk about the need for something much more dynamic and engaging. So this they're talking about, they mention simulations as a highly effective method for training. You probably ask, you know, what simulation we're talking about? Like hacking simulation. It's not hacking simulation. It's more like real world scenario that employee might encounter in day to day work. For example, remember those phishing email we're talking about early. Imagine if you receive a fake phishing email as part of a training exercise. Now that would definitely make it more real than just about training manual. So it takes you out of the theoretical realm and put you in the right middle of the potential attack. So you experience the emotional trigger, the sense of urgency, you know. So one of the things that we want to talk about is when you're practicing to do in real life situation, but in a safe and controlled environment, people will remember the lesson learned and be better equipped for those who spot the real threats in their boxes. Our brain tends to remember our experience much better than abstract concept. So when you say simulate, when I say simulation, I'm talking about simulation, a great way to make cybersecurity training more effective and memorable. And the source also emphasized that this simulation should be tailored in different roles and departments and within organization. because a salesperson is probably going to encounter different type of threat than someone in accounting or IT. It's about making training relevant to people's daily work so they can see how it directly applies to their responsibility. So this would not be a type of training that you probably, most people say this type of training pretty resource intensive. Well, not every organization has the budget or expertise to create an elaborate simulation. That's the major concern. But the good news is that the source also point out that there are a lot of affordable and accessible tools and platforms available to help organizations implement. So even a small business can take steps to improve their security posture by remembering implementing the basic training program and fostering. So it's not just about technology or the tools, it's about changing the mindset and behavior. And here's another reason, important point out to the source make. Cybersecurity training cannot just be a one-time event. It needs to be ongoing and constantly evolving. I mean, the bad guys always come up with the new tricks and our defense need to be paced. And the source recommend a regular refresher, update, and the latest threat. Incorporate a real-world example of a recent attack through the training. So think about it, it's like continuous learning process, always adapting to the ever-changing landscape of cyber threat. And this brings up a really important question to our listener. How often does your workplace actually do the training on this stuff? Keeping it pace with you, the bad guy, something to think about. It's easy to just go to motion and those really training module and we really absorb the information apply in our daily work, you know? So they actually suggest that traditional security training is really important part of our daily work. But, you know, for those boring lectures and those click the module, they just might not cutting it anymore. So relating to that feeling, I sat through my fair share of those and I cannot always walk through the feeling like super informed. We move beyond the passive learning, creative training, and that's more engaging. And I dare say even fun. Go ahead.
I've got two comments. Mm-hmm. As I'm sitting here listening to you. You know, the hacker only has to be right once.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. To cause damage. Whereas right. the safety net internally to an organization, it's got to be pretty much every time. It's got to execute properly. It's kind of like the Iron Dome, the missile defense system that we deployed in Israel, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't afford to be off.
Good
once.
Point. Good.
I mean,
good
if
point.
It's big enough.
But here's the thing,
and
though.
Then, mm-hmm.
Go ahead. The thing
well,
is.
And the other thing, that the second point is, no matter how much. How strong your Iron Dome is, okay? Did you see what happened at Citigroup this past April? It just came out here yesterday or day before. They inadvertently credited a customer account for $81 trillion, with a T, dollars. $81 trillion. And it got discovered. Why? Because of processes. You know, they have internal controls. There was a review process, and it got caught. But can you imagine if that had been – it obviously was an internal – a gaffe, if you will, an error. But what if it had been planned?
So
either internally or externally?
So there are two things the source talked about, right? There's the technology, then human factor in, right? That's why you build layer security. You think about this. You're not be able to stop 100%. But when you build layers, okay, for example, the concept is like this. What you cannot prevent, you detect. What you cannot detect, you respond. Okay? The process. And of course one will get away. But the question is, when you had layer security, you minimize the damage and you be able to respond back. The same thing with the concept of a call. The first, you know, that's why United States and the Russian during the Cold War, they have this call these nobody's like this policy. Nobody's supposed to have a first strike capability. What that means is that if you have a first strike capability, one strike, you destroy your enemy completely without them responding back. and United States and Russia and China to get together, they say no one must have that first strike capability. That means they allow you to spy, they allow you to fly on their sky. There's a limit that you can do to guarantee you don't have the first strike capability. Same thing with security. I understand that. Okay, that's why you build layer of security. And same thing with human factor. And I'll give you one example with technology. Think about this. If the hacker get into your firewall, and after they got in, and since you have no protection, they wiped out the entire everything. However, if you have a firewall to get in, then you have an endpoint security, they have to go through that. Then on top of that, by the time they break it, the alarm already sound. You slow them down so you can stop the inevitable, you know, the total damage. That's the whole idea. And the same thing with human factor. When you receive an email, okay, most people will respond, say, you know what, my boss probably doing it. But imagine if you learn all about this and you say, you know what, my boss never sent me this kind of email. Maybe I better double check. That extra scrutiny right there will make the difference. Same thing. There's a human factor. Okay, you can't stop them. I understand, you know, but go ahead.
Well, I haven't read the article thoroughly, but I'm presuming when it got detected a couple hours later, that was from, I know, you know, when I execute a wire with my bank, it doesn't just go out right that second. There's in some cases, one of my banks actually has someone call and confirm that I wanted to execute the wire. So I would find it highly, highly irregular if one person in any bank could execute singularly, where there's no approval process with a third, you know, a second person, a wire. I mean, I'm not going to say of any size, but I mean, one of the banks that I deal with requires them on anything over $25,000. Well, you know, maybe that's what trapped this, but I mean, I guess there are trillion-dollar transactions going on every day where you can't just block the keyboard from typing a number that big, right? That's amazing that that could happen then.
Well, talk about deepfake, and I want to, when I say deepfake, have you ever seen this so real you can even tell the difference? I can take 2 minutes of your voice, okay? I capture your voice, and I can turn around and I can make an audio of your voice and your face, everything. Now, there is a moment that's why I'm telling people, you have to look for those, you know, imperfections. Sometimes they're not perfect, too. They do make mistakes, okay?
Well, the video still, I've yet to see a video where I thought it was real.
It's coming.
But that's not to say, right, that's not to say it won't be here soon. And not only that, what if the person watching the video doesn't know? It's one thing when it's Elon Musk or Donald Trump's image.
Yeah.
It's another if it's somebody you don't know.
That's right.
And yet
that's right.
You're supposed to be doing something for them, you know?
Well,
I don't know. It's scary.
Well, get back to the email. I'll give you an example, okay?
Yeah, okay.
The kind of email that they're using AI. I want to say this is about AI and cybersecurity. The kind of email that they know your whole life story, and the way they use AI, they summarize in such a way that they hide all the footprint, digital footprint. You can't even tell. Because imagine this, if somebody send you an email, one thing, but if I send you an email based on your profile, based on in the past, all your email, how you talk, it will catch you, okay? And I say, you know, in the past you do this and that, and then today you need, you know, they read your entire story and they summarize it, and it's so realistic. Okay, and I'm telling you, it almost had me, and I am tech savvy. And imagine the people who are not tech savvy, what happened? Think about that. That you're right. It takes only one time, right? But imagine when they go even further, talk about human firewall. You know what it means by human firewall? It's like everybody aware of what's going on. It's the firewall basically when they come in, you examine what is this? Should I click on it? Same concept. With human element, you look at that email, you question, you know, that extra skepticism will make the big difference. And with AI today, it's getting real, buddy. It's getting real. You can't even tell. And especially when they use voice, like they can simulate the voice of your family member. Okay. You can, and that's the one case in real estate. And I'm telling you, it's so realistic. It costs people money. It also depends on who they target to. Your target audience, usually not the young people, or, you know, like between 25 to 50. They're targeting the elder, like 70, 80. They tend to believe that. They want to make believe that. And it's already happening. So what you need to do is you use code, right? I'll just give an example. You use code. When somebody asks you to do something, you use the code only you know about, you and that your loved one know about. But there's a lot of things going on, Nathan. There's a lot of things going on. We just need to be extra careful, you know? And so they talk about the real training for corporate, and not just for corporate, but also human. So, I mean, regular people like us, like we need to take an extra step. Okay, and later on, we're going to talk more about the cloud security. And, by the way, I want to talk about, the project that I'm working on, and it's related to how to help the senior, the stuff that I'm using AI to create, talk about voice simulations, and we'll dig more. So you want to go ahead and take the break on this one real quick?
You bet. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground.
Hello. Welcome back. So we're going to talk about cloud security and threat mitigations. Nathan, are you there? So the topic today, the second topic, is cloud and security and how we uncover the latest threat looming over today's cloud environments and share some expert strategy to keep our data secure. So I want to talk about the evolving landscape in cloud security by examining real-world incident, spotlighting a new attack method, and exploring the best practice to protect your organization. From misconfiguration and insider threat to sophisticated phishing campaign and zero-day vulnerability, the modern cloud ecosystem, facing risks and demand constant vigilance. That's why I'm here. So to arm you with the knowledge to need to fortify and defenses. We're talking about with industry leaders and security and cloud engineers who are on the front line defending critical. So get ready for deep dive and let's ensure that the data and our peace of mind stay safe in the cloud. So anyway, when you talk about the cloud, Nathan, are you there? What it mean like security, like, oh, are we safe? You know, so there's a source on Tech Today. We're talking about security risks are coming, this whole ship about the cloud. It's not just doom and gloom. We're talking about how to stay safe and where we need
when,
to be.
How can we distinguish between, I mean, you know, some of our listeners are working in companies where they've got a more sophisticated army of IT folks. Some are just normal users at home, if you will, using, you know, Microsoft Office or Google Workspace. How do you differentiate, again, working in the cloud? I mean, virtually everything is, quote, in the cloud, but there's some big differences in the security systems that are applied at these, depending on how much you're paying, right? In some measure.
Yeah. So I like to use the analogy, you know, using a cloud is like you live in an apartment with a bunch of people, okay? And even though you have your door locked, but that's not enough. Even you protect your door, it's not enough, right? So it take, you said, you know what? I have a lock, I have the alarm system, but guess what? If there's a crack in the entire building and you don't know about it, and over time, and I want to go deep dive into the difference between the lock and the, in a different kind. So you're right. So that's why you have to be careful who your vendors are. It's just like going to see the doctors. Who's your doctor? Or if you have a child, you have a kid, you're going to send it to a daycare. You need to find out about those daycare, right? Are they up to date? Are they pass all the requirement exam? Are they, you know, pass all the state regulation? Things like that.
Yeah, who's working there?
Who's working there?
People with a history?
So everybody's working now. So everybody, think about this. We live in a world, everybody have a job. Nobody stay home. The parent, both parents are working. You rely on somebody taking care of your kid and your grandparents, right? Those, think about, those are cloud. The cloud is basically somebody else's computer, plain and simple, okay? Same thing with all the business. So to answer your question, okay, so Google is like a big giant university or a high-end, state-of-the-art high-rise, okay? And they have security guard, they have people look at that, right? But what if the security guard is corrupted? So you have to make sure, because that's where we're talking about API. A lot of people will say, what the heck is API? You know, think about this. Okay, API is, that's communication between, I'll make it simple. Okay, when you go into a restaurant, you order food. Okay, you actually talk to the waiter. The waiter take your order and go to the kitchen, to the chef. The waiter is the API, plain and simple. Okay, it's a task, it's a specific, it's, he perform a specific task based on what you ask him to order. He go into the kitchen, give to the chef, he come back, he take your credit card, he put it in his pocket. Guess what? He's compromised. That's security on API. So even if you have a nice hotel or nice high rise, but if your security guard or the people working there corrupted, it's the same thing. So what you do, you vet them, right? You vet them, you make sure that they go to the right source, the right resource that hiring those people. It's not what you have to verify. Everybody have to work, and you have, and you make sure that those tasks are in place. Same thing.
Yeah.
Because if
it'd
the whole
be nice if we had some multi-factor authentication.
Well, that's the next step, right? So, and I tell these people, okay, all this, for a company to have good security posture, you must have three components. And I'll use analogy again: a lock, an alarm system, and a fire drill. What is the lock? The lock is your endpoint security, your firewall, right? Like, instead of having a simple lock, you have a combination. But today, what's separate a good lock from a bad lock? Biometrics, That's a good lock. But that's not enough. That's not enough.
And biometric can be fingerprint, can be your face.
Yeah, that's dual factor authentication.
What else is being used?
Right. That's dual factor.
What else is being used?
Well, that's also the eyes contact. Now they're using eyes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So it all say reference to what you just said, multi-factor authentication. But that's not enough. You also need an alarm system. What is alarm system? If you have a company, think about this. Your IT folks, they don't work 24/7. They have to go to sleep, right? So basically, most companies, they hire a third party that's managing their network. Look at their network, have agreement with that net with the company to go in and monitor your system. Something happened, they call you, or they take action on your behalf. That's an alarm system.
What are they looking for? I'm just curious. Is it a situation of which logins are able to access? I mean, how does the alarm go off?
Okay, this is how it works.
What causes?
Okay, so basically the company, you hire them, you have a contract with them, and they will set up an API. Remember, we talked about an API. Basically, it's a process that go directly to your network. The task API is basically a task, right? And they look at your network, your Active Directory. They look at your login. If they see anything unusual, they work on your behalf. Basically, they are the analysts working 24/7 for you. They never stop. They have system. They monitor. They install the agent. On every PC, they're monitoring it for you. Anything out of ordinary, abnormally, they will contact you or stop it for you. That's the alarm system, okay? Because our IT, if you have the company work globally, they don't have time to manage all that. They only work from 9 to 5. So an alarm system basically is a managed company that manages network for you, okay? And then the third component, the fire drill, what does that mean? Pen test. How do you know your lock and your alarm is working? You perform the pen test. You make sure that your firework, your alarm, and your alarm and your lock is working by performing a pen test. Pen test is basically a software that allows you to, you know what, you test, see if, hey, I'm triggering the alert. Anybody notice? Does the alarm people notice? Alarm company notice? If my team notice, you do that internally. It's harmless. It's nothing. You know, all you do is just like a phishing. Same thing with phishing tests. You test your users, see if they're aware of it, right? So you must have the alarm. So that's why the three component: the lock, the alarm, and the fire drill. Okay, and the same thing with the cloud. If you trust people who monitor your cloud, who monitor your data. You have to put the endpoint secure. They don't, sometimes they provide the endpoint, sometimes they don't, but you need to make sure it's happening. On top of that, you make sure that they also have alarms, something happened. Because they just give you the space, like a hotel, like the apartment. Hey, we just give you the room, the rest up to you, right? But some apartment provide those things, the alarm, right? And the security guard. So same thing.
Yeah.
You don't just trust anybody handle your cloud. You make sure those systems are in place. Okay? So.
Got it.
Now it's even more. Now it's getting worse now. You must have today with all the deepfake and all the AI. Let me tell you something. Usually, if you turn back the clock 10 years ago, you have the hacker, right? They perform the tasks and they run your computers. And it takes about, they can do like, hey, you know what? I can do 100 hacking at the same time. But today, according to AWS and Cisco, millions in seconds. You're right. It takes only one to get in, right? But that's why get back to having a cloud, having all those stuff is not good enough. Do you have a good backup system?
See? Yeah. Talking about email as an example and deep fakes, is Google or I guess Microsoft, whoever, you know, people are running their email on sort of platforms, but do they sift through the verbiage or the embedded imagery in an email and detect that a video or an attachment is a deep fake? Because they all have telltale signs. Can a computer do that, or does that take you're in my eyes as we're looking at our emails?
What do you mean? You have to get it.
Well,
give me
in other
example.
Words, it's like I said, I've seen videos that are embedded in emails where I knew instantly, hey, that's not Donald Trump or Elon Musk. Well, can the spam filter type technology not detect that before it ever gets in my inbox?
Yes. So that's what's separate from a good email filter company from the rest, right? Some of them use AI as well. And some of them use, like, if you talk about email security, it takes a lot. They have, like, a DMARC, like, I'm talking about, it's inside, you don't see it. But there's a company that actually look at that, not just the header, but looking at your content, but also look at, that's what separate them from the rest. And Google have that too. That's why if you have Google, they also have option that do you want, like, enhanced, like they charge you extra, but they also have email filter. Otherwise, you're going to have every single email go to your inbox. But you notice when you pay them a fee, if you, like, an advanced user and you pay extra,
I need to understand more about that. I mean, I pay extra for my Gmail, my quote, free Gmail, but I thought that was simply for additional storage. Are you suggesting there's other tools?
No. They
bundled with that.
They are bundled with that. If you notice something, okay, a lot of email go to the spam box. A lot of them. A lot of them. So that means they have some kind of filter. And if you pay extra, they do have some kind of filter. I know I have.
Yeah.
I have Gmail, and then they filter a lot, but some do get through. Okay.
Sure.
And. But that's not good enough. I'm telling you, eventually, like you said, it takes only one time. One time. It takes only one. That's why you have a layer of security. Make sure you have a good backup. Always a good backup. Okay? It's not the question that if you can get hacked. The question is when. How fast do you get it back?
That's true. And most people don't have a good backup.
No, they don't. And if you know, there's a lot of companies are not put on server anymore. They're going to the cloud, but I don't blame them. At least on the cloud, you have some sort of backup. Like, you leave the responsibility to the vendor, right? To the supply, to the people managing it. And most of the time, you're taking a risk of compromise. I'm telling you, but that's
so
why.
Does Gmail have the ability to restore to a certain point?
I think I don't use it my primary email, but I know that. They have capability to some, but not all, to restore your email, okay?
Well, I know they've got applications on the workspace side, which is their business side. I know they have applications that are available for you to back up. And, you know, you get into even the legal requirements that are in place for larger companies. But I'm not sure it's just part of the standard package. I need to look at that, but I know I've got an application that I believe it's put out by Cloud HQ. That, you know, Cloud HQ is a vendor that has about 80 different utilities for Gmail, and they've got one that actually does copy your emails to a Google Sheet. Pretty nice, but. I'm not sure that's exactly, I mean, in terms of restoring it back to an email system, I don't think that's what it's for.
But, yeah, no, I don't think so. But Google has a very, very good protection system. But there are a lot of uncertainty now with AI. If you look at how many ChatGPT just came out, the bunch of them, there's so many I can't even keep up with it. And I'm the one who really up to date with all this stuff.
What'd you call it? ChatGPT.
I just give an example. OpenAI.
Oh, wait a minute. So you're saying ChatGPT has some sort of email backup?
I'm saying there's so many AI going on out there. They're designed to break your email. You know, to steal your information.
And
the problem, you're not going to see that. I'm not worried about them. You're not going to see a lot of them like steal your delete your email. Or ransom your email, the cloud, you can already store fast. The problem I'm worried about is they steal your information. Okay? They're stealing your
information. Well, how do these AI systems, I mean, once you sign up with, you know, your flavor of choice, you know, be it Copilot or ChatGPT or assorted others, mm-hmm. how does your own data on your own system not become part of that, you know, that
okay, you,
value?
You're talking about LLM. You're talking about large language model. Okay, anything on the cloud, you have no control. Especially ChatGPT, there's no control. They take your data, all right? Unless you build your own ChatGPT, like Facebook have one, that you can build your own LLM model that learn from the big model, that using your own data, okay? And that is coming. That is coming.
Is there any way to prevent your own data from getting sucked out?
Nope.
By one
you
of
can't.
These
nope.
AI?
You can't. There's no guarantee. No, you cannot. That's why a lot of this model, you got to be careful who you use. Like the one DeepSeek, the one in China, they actually use your data, steal your data, right? They copy your data. You have no control.
So then your data mm-hmm. becomes part of their knowledge base for
exactly.
doing queries.
Exactly. So that's why a lot of companies, you must have a rail guard, right? And a lot of U.S. companies are compliant. They make sure that they have. Look, AI is so advanced. Even regulation have to play catch up. And not just regulation, most companies are playing catch up. We have no idea. But what I can tell you today, I give an example, ChatGPT is the US, OpenAI, but there are a bunch of them from China, from Alibaba, from other companies. They launched so many of them. What do you expect? They are learning from other models. They are getting your data. But
yeah.
Now you have an option to build your own.
Yeah, and even Google just, you know, forget about their AI mm-hmm. application. They use your data. I mean, they've been sued many times.
Facebook,
right?
Too,
I mean,
and Facebook, too, right?
Right, mm-hmm. right. So, I mean, I wouldn't trust any of them. But, I mean, my concern is if you're working on third-party clients, mm-hmm. not your data, it's your client's data.
Yeah, you've got to be
how
careful.
How do you prevent that
you can't.
From getting...
You can't.
You know, sucked up into their knowledge bases.
I don't think you can, but the new thing is coming.
Well, it's
got
to have something to do with the system you're mm-hmm. working in. Like in our case, we're using tax software, and, you know, presumably there's protections within that software, but I don't know how to explain it, but I just can't imagine. And, of course, that's running off a data center, so there's several layers of
now keep in mind Google and Microsoft, like Copilot, okay, they the enterprise version, they have their own security, they have their own they call railguard, like safety net in there, because they are working off from OpenAI engine, so they have some safety net out there. If you use like Microsoft Azure, that's one of the OpenAI. So this is how it works. The way it works like this, a lot of companies doing this, it's called your own open AI. Think about this, your own LLM, meaning your data. So they provide you the engine, and I'll give you one example. And I'm building the test contract now, okay, on Google. I built my own AI open chat, but it using my information. So basically, there's a term called a RAG. It's basically called... retrieval augmented generations. So basically your own data, you take all your data, for example all your accounting stuff, you put it in to your own storage, okay, and that the model OpenAI only look at that, no nothing else. But when people searching for something, that's where the Google ChatGPT kicked in, and that chat model is the engine that look at your data and analyze it. Basically your information will be real information. Because right now, most people don't realize when you ask OpenAI something, those information may not be true. They just throw a bunch of information at you, but they're not accurate. Some of them are not accurate. You cannot trust 100%. But with your own LLM, your own model, all your source data is real. So basically, when you use a chat and looking for information, for example, this tax information I have last year or newsletter last year, they based on your data, and it's using the Google engine LLM to process your data. Does that make sense? So meaning your data contained in your own RIM, your own AI model, not anybody, nobody can see it. That's a railguard. Oh. That's a railguard. So you're using them, they have their own railguard, then you use your own, you have another railguard. They're two railguard.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay? So that gotcha. Is coming. A lot of companies are doing this. They're taking their own data, and they say, so this is the term called RAG, R-A-G, okay? And we can talk more. I just built myself yesterday.
That makes sense to me.
Right.
Because there's got to be a way to protect.
Yeah. So remember, you can see a lot of regulation, right? So that's one thing. It's just like this, just like giving an AI a moral compass. That's a railguard, right? So yeah. Google have to do their own, but right now, OpenAI, are you kidding me? $20 a month, you have no control of your data. But the data they give you not accurate either. They just throw a bunch of stuff at you, okay?
Yeah.
And I check some, they're not accurate. Don't assume AI is accurate.
Well, when you look across the landscape of, Chat GPT or Gemini, which is Google's, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is Gemini Google or Microsoft is Copilot?
Microsoft
right?
and Copilot, and
we've got Apple Intelligence now, which I understand is not quite on par with those others. But maybe Facebook's.
But here's the thing, though. Facebook called Llama, okay? Now, here's the thing. Facebook, Microsoft, Google, they all work off from OpenAI. Remember that. Just like,
so they're a subset of OpenAI? Or
like
they
OpenAI,
work as a team, a partnership?
No, they're using OpenAI engine in layman's term. Just like OpenAI said, okay, back in the day, a year ago, Microsoft offered OpenAI $90 billion, remember? To buy the whole thing, right? And today...
Microsoft offered OpenAI.
Yeah, to buy them out $90 billion, something like that.
Yeah.
And to remove the CEO, right? Because OpenAI, they want out the CEO, and Microsoft offered $90 billion. But he said, the CEO of OpenAI said, that's not the vision. They don't want to give to one person to the key to the kingdom. Instead, he wanted to share with everybody, but he keep the key. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
He want to share to
Sam Altman,
Microsoft. Yeah, to Microsoft and Facebook and Apple. They want to share them. They want to give them that, but not everything. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody have control of the key. But a week ago, I think Elon Musk just offered OpenAI to buy the entire thing for $90 billion. And I don't think he answered it. But does that make sense?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. It was a smart aleck answer. I mean, he wasn't interested.
He didn't interest it. So everybody wanted the key to the kingdom. So in other words, I'm selling you the engine, but I'm to control the source. Just like operating system. Think of OpenAI like an OS, right? But this is getting interesting. So I'm going to dig more. Maybe we talk more next time about the RAG pipeline, but I'm really interested. That kind of give more assurance to people who use it. But I would not leave my information. I would not, for example, you know what DeepSeek is? That's a Chinese OpenAI, right? I would not use it in my corporate office. I tell you right now, they steal information.
Yeah.
Because...
What's the differentiation that's significant between those various products, Apple Intelligence, to me, is something that we can't discount. It may not be as stout as these others, but it's on every iPhone that gets sold, and, you know, it's easy for people to access and utilize it, I mean, you know, comparatively speaking, but... Is there an argument to be made that for the average person, one of these products, like Apple Intelligence, is a better choice just because it eliminates some of the risk and at the same time it's readily available? It's like the you remember the old question about which camera is the best camera to carry around when you're on vacation, et cetera. And the answer was the one you can put in your pocket. Because, you know, the issue is, are you there when you need it? Or, you know, you have a camera when you need it versus you're in a wedding studio doing, you know, arranged, choreographed, so to speak, photos. So can that same argument be made with, like, Apple Intelligence, where I didn't have to go add, you know, separate subscriptions? It was just part of the hardware package, effectively?
I think right now the one that Apple Intelligence built in is for the Siri, for one example. It's built in, right? And also, if you have the Apple Vision, they also built in those too. And I tell you, I like Apple. The way they're doing things, like their meticulous application of technology, the way they're using it, they really iron down to. They don't just throw things, and they think about it before they pass it, before they accessing it. But anyway, brother, we could talk more about, especially DeepSeek. Okay, DeepSeek is very fast. When you want to compare DeepSeek to OpenAI, DeepSeek is very fast. And I'm telling you, it thinks like humans. It thinks like the way the process is thinking when they do math. It actually catch the mistake and process. Like when you, back then in high school, when you do math step by step, it's doing that. The DeepSeek, and they do it under very low budget either, like a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, let's pick up a week from now. We're right down to the end here on this week's show.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming in again. And I'll be back on Friday with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We'll pick up with all things tax, real estate, retirement planning, and taxation. And we'll talk about more of what's going on with the current administration's potential tax policies. We appreciate you tuning in again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.